Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about the rotational benefits of wheat. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at some new breeding for soybeans, the University of Minnesota. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of wheat in Wisconsin. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. The Packers have managed to come out of the bye week and do okay. I saw this thing the other day that I thought was interesting. So every win they have so far this season is 27 points.
That's what they scored.
In a win.
Okay.
The only time they scored more than that was the tie to the Cowboys, where it was 40-40.
It was a tie, okay.
And they scored, I think, like 10 in the loss. So that's apparently the magic number. You've got to get to 27 points.
And you win.
And then it's a win.
It's Aaron Rodgers week, so.
Yep, we got Rodgers this week.
He was all happy with the Green Bay media yesterday, all kissing their butt.
Like reminiscing.
Yeah.
Saying how he's going to end his career as a Packer.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
supposedly
this is his last season.
Okay.
That's the rumor is that he's going to retire now.
And he'll come back he's not going to play. He's just going to have a one-day contract or whatever.
Yeah, like all the other guys do.
How do you guys feel? Like, is it okay if we lose Rodgers, or is it like absolutely not?
I think with Favre, it was because he was a Viking. It's like,
yes,
it was like, I think, yeah, like it's okay, but we're a better team, I think.
Yeah, I don't really want to lose to him at all.
And yeah.
Nothing against him. It's more of just, I like the Packers more than him, and he left. So, yeah it's.
No, I would prefer to see the Packers beat him, but it wouldn't be as bad as, a loss to the Vikings or Detroit.
If it was in an NFC North team,
right,
and our rivals, Bears, Detroit, or the Vikings, absolutely not. But somebody else like the Steelers.
Supposedly Christian Watson's supposed to come back this game, so. Oh,
so he can.
That might be.
He can just run and get hurt.
Right.
By a non-contact injury again.
As long as it's after a touchdown, that'd be fine.
After getting paid in the offseason.
Yeah.
It's just got really sensitive hamstrings, okay?
Very sensitive.
The Steelers are wearing their Bumblebee outfits.
Oh, they got.
Oh, is it?
Yellow, black.
Throwback game, whatever.
Yeah, their jersey swap's going to be lame. But the Packers are wearing their winter warning, though, all white.
Oh, the white out?
Yep.
And the white helmets, too?
Yeah.
The full white?
Yep. Yeah. They can't have two yellow helmets, apparently, at the same time.
Sure.
I mean, they can, but...
It would get confusing,
It would be hard, yeah. Yep.
But, yeah.
I think if Parsons plays as well as he did before, they'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it's special teams that usually screws it up. So if they can not have as many mistakes as normal, then we're probably good. And
Steelers usually have good special teams. They're usually pretty disciplined that way. So you're right. Just don't screw up and hopefully make the person.
That's the phase of the game that you're really the most worried about is special teams. I mean, the offense is a little bit hit or miss at times, but I would hope they got most of the bugs from the bye week worked out last week. And
how many holds against Micah Parsons will there be not called? That looked like the new move is you just
hold
them every time, and they're not going to throw the flag every time. And just sort of, especially it's like a rat, kind of hook them.
Sure.
And so not grabbing jersey style hold, just kind of hook in the front, and then, just slow them down that 1 second and... Yeah, it was almost like they were teaching these offensive linemen to, it's that borderline hold call where they let go just in time. Once he's sort of past you, it's like, well, then you better let go. But just kind of
enough to slow him down,
right?
Yeah,
get your grace of like 3 seconds or whatever.
Yeah. That's still my favorite. The one.
Do you think the refs
blew by somebody and then the offensive lineman yelled, "Watch out!" You know.
Yeah.
He's coming. So great.
I screwed up.
You can just see whoever yelling at Rodgers. Then Rodgers getting mad, like that clip you showed of Matt had a great one of Rodgers from last week.
Oh, he was just pissed when his own lineman tackled him in celebration of a touchdown. And he got up to like shove the guy and like scream in his face. I think that's too why I would prefer to see him lose, is because he could be such a baby.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Do you want to see him throw his tablet again?
And maybe that's part of it too, is like Rodgers being nice to the Green Bay media, to us as old fans now. But it'll be interesting how he is after a win or after a loss.
Right, yeah.
After a win, I think he'll obviously be, I don't think he'll throw in our face or anything, but after a loss, I think he would be more of a baby about it.
It's one thing he does have in common with Tom Brady is Tom Brady, when he would lose or have something bad, he'd always be a big baby. And then all the announcers would always make excuses like, "Oh, yeah, he's just so into the game.
Yeah.
His emotions are running high." And it's like, no, he's just throwing a tantrum.
I want it when I see farmers get upset or custom guys and have it out with their employees. That's what I think too, man. They're just so into farming. They love it so much.
Just so into it.
That they so can't hold in their emotions.
So much on the line.
That's more they're just so tired. Right. So exhausted.
Yep.
They don't have any control over what comes out sometimes.
So play by play,
the weather's been a bear.
Yeah. Play by play on a farm would be fun. You had like an announcer and a color guy.
Ooh, and that gate did not close properly. We'll see what happens. I was actually at field day the other day, and we were all standing around, and all of a sudden, like, this car pulls in, and you figure, oh, it's just somebody else coming to check it out or whatever, and comes up to the farmer, and he's like, "Yeah, you got heifers running down the road." It's like, oh no,
that's about the worst. What was the because there's a couple of reactions there. The one is like almost an immediate, just like it's just panic. They just like, yes, it's just like it's just a go, not a like, hey, you grab this. It's just one farmer's just go. Then I've seen other farmers where it's like, okay, like I'm going to plan this out. Like you grab this, you get, you know, cattle trailer, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Was it just an immediate?
It was. So it was the one that got told his brother and the hired guy, and then they ran.
Right. So it was the, like.
You go do it.
It was the delegation.
Yes.
It was the. Well, this isn't my problem. This is your problems. Like, go take care of this.
I'm dealing with this field day.
So.
Yeah, they didn't have
but it was fun.
Field day members did not have to go wrangle cattle.
No, they weren't gone long. It didn't take much. They weren't.
That's the other. Some of those could be real bad.
And oh, yeah.
Some are just like, oh, yeah, it's not, yeah.
It is crazy, though, for, like, the amount of cattle that get moved within a barn to go to the parlor and back that. It doesn't happen more often where someone just leaves a gate or...
Yeah,
right.
All it takes is, you go through one gate and forget to latch it or don't latch it quite right. And
there's 300 cows in the yard.
Yeah, somebody, yeah. Yeah, last winter I came in a yard and there was like, it was probably, they were heifers-ish, but it was icy.
Yeah.
And four were out and just... The old slip around, splitting kind of, and you're just like, the farmer wasn't there, but the herdsman kind of was, and then we got him in, and it was fine. But just those times too, where you could tell the cattle didn't realize what they were in for when they left that gate, and
thought it was gonna be fun.
Yeah,
the worst one I remember was actually was a yearling getting work done for the fair, and it just like tore off and ran through a fence. So not only is there now a hole in the fence, but you have this animal that's cut up and everything else from running through the fence.
Yeah, and it was a fair animal.
Yep.
Yes.
And it was like, ooh.
How close to the fair was that?
That I don't remember.
Yeah, because that would be too off too. Is like, oh, fair's
next week
tomorrow. Yeah, or next
week. It was probably like. within a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't so
enough
like,
time to yeah. get it off.
I don't think it was like the next week or anything, but it was close enough where, you know, it was questionable whether it was all going to heal, but yeah. not, yeah. A little black magic covers that up, no problem.
All the tricks, man.
Yeah, I knew none of those. That's probably why I never did well in cattle showing. All right, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yeah.
So I know we're getting toward the tail end of wheat planting. There is still a few guys that are probably out there finishing up those last acres, but I think every year, just hear, you know, oh, it's a worthless crop. It's, you know.
Poverty grass.
Oh, yep.
You want to talk? Sorry, you got me. I hate that.
You hate poverty grass? I
hate that people call it that. Because it's, the ones that call it that put nothing into it either. Usually, right.
They plant it late and they don't.
Right. There's yeah. no, and it's said is almost like a slight to the guys that do. I don't know. It's just. Recently had somebody call it that and they didn't have a reason to call it that, if you don't want to say it that way, and just frustrating because it's got its ups and downs, it's got its problems, but
yeah,
the
we rarely see high value wheat. I mean, it's not like the days of which we may never see the value of $7 corn. I mean, it might hit $7 again, but it's probably not going to be worth as much as $7 corn was the last time we saw it. But it still has a purpose. It's still a good fit for a lot of rotations. So even beyond just the crop's value itself, there's other ways to think about how it's affecting not only yield for that particular crop, but yield within the rotation. So it's a way to break corn and soybean cycle or the alfalfa corn cycle, whatever farm you're in, gives you an option to have something different. And what I thought was interesting, I mean, you hear about it, but I found a couple examples. So Michigan State and Nebraska both had some examples of it, of a rotational yield bump that you can expect with wheat. So from Nebraska, they talked about in their rotations, they did a three-year summary of a corn, three-crop rotation, soybean, wheats, and corn. Wheats. I don't know why
wheats.
I said wheats.
You call it wheats. That's fine.
There's more than one wheat plant in there, right? So in general, the overall rotation, you get a 4% bump in yield, 4% more than just the corn soybean rotation.
So it's a 4% in the corn and in the soybean, or is it?
Yeah. So over the life of the rotation, it was a 4% bump. Just corn specifically, it was a 6% bump. So you would experience 6% higher yield in that three crop rotation. Michigan State put a different set of numbers on it. They had wheat in the rotation increased corn yields by 10%. And in Michigan studies where wheat was followed by a cover crop, like frost-seeded red clover, corn yields 15% higher than like a corn-on-corn rotation. So specifically, regardless of whether you're looking at corn and soybean or breaking up the corn-on-corn rotation, you're going to see some sort of yield bump. So even though the wheat itself may not be your highest profitability crop, it has the potential to bump up the yields in your next crop.
Which think of that. That's real numbers, and we never attribute that to the wheat profitability.
Right.
Like, you don't say, like, I'm going to take this 4% and what I gain here and put it towards the wheat or anything.
Well, and everybody knows that we get a percent bump when we come out of alfalfa, right? Like,
right.
That's a real number that everyone takes account for, but in reality, do we even think about that in wheat? It's like, it's whatever. I'm going to plant late. I'm going to plant it on my bad ground because of whatever reasons. Maybe I didn't get them planted this summer. And then like you said, that's why I think some of this is, quote, poverty grass, because like you said, Todd, people don't treat it the way it should be.
Right. And then you're not giving it the full value. It's, right. You know, we in general like to talk about sports on this podcast, and think of those role players in sports that, yes, on the Packers, we've got guys like Micah Parsons and some really good wide receivers now, but without Josh Jacobs running the ball and doing the hard stuff, sometimes we wouldn't be where we are. You need those sort of role guys to do their role,
right,
and know their role. And yes, their role isn't win you the game all the time, but it's to do certain things to get to run the clock out and get a few tough first downs so that you can move on to the next thing. And that's Wheat's job here. It's not going to be something, yes, you're not going to maybe make as much as you'd like all the time with it, but it's going to benefit everything else.
Yeah. And so that's outside of just the Wheat itself. When you take into account Wheat and what it provides, so not only do you get the grain side, but there usually is a market for straw. And that can be a feed supplement for you, can be a bedding for you, or it can be a sales opportunity to someone who wants wheat straw for either bedding or to put into their feed rations. So, yes, there is a trade-off of fertilizer value and removing straw from the field. And as you move through fertilizer price cycles and everything else, you may have to weigh the options of whether it's more valuable to you to leave the straw out in the field versus selling it. It still provides an additional benefit that most other crops don't have. Like, even if you were to take soybean straw, the value of soybean straw isn't the same as the value of a wheat straw. So there are benefits to wheat because it gives you multiple options of how to market it. It's not just the grain that you have to worry about.
And I even remember Matt, our old friend Joe Lauer, and I actually found his research. He had a long-term study of a corn-soybean rotation or a corn-soybean-wheat rotation or a corn-wheat-soybean. So kind of basically adding wheat to the mix. And that was a study that his research was between 94 and 07. So this paper came out in 08. So it's getting up there now, almost 20 years, but I think it's still pretty relevant. And his research over that many years showed that that rotation, adding wheat to the rotation, didn't affect corn yield, but it increased the soybean yield. So you are gaining yield and rotational benefits by adding that third crop of wheat.
Another thing that wheat gives you in the rotation is because it is a fall-to-fall crop as opposed to a spring-to-fall crop, is you get options for cover crops. So it's an earlier window to establish a cover crop and to do more with more species if that's your goal. It also gives you forage options. If you take off straw and you're a dairy farm or raising beef cattle and you need additional forage, it gives you a window to grow something that could be used to feed your cattle. So there, the potential for double cropping that you don't really have with any other cash crop in Wisconsin is another rotational benefit that you gain by having wheat in the rotation. So either one can be of value depending on what your goals are for your farm.
And you get really good growth, right? I mean, you've had awesome August and September and early Octobers. I mean, it's almost the last week of October here, and we finally got our really hard frost last night. So you get really good growth. I know I have a couple growers that have went to needing some forage, so they put some oats in and has really gotten really good yields off those oats after winter wheat. So like you said, it opens up a lot of things.
There are soil health benefits, so not only being able to establish those cover crops after, but also wheat acting similar to a cover crop because you have to plant it in the fall. So you get fall weed management, you get erosion control, and any other effect that you might attribute to a cover crop, whether that's holding on to nutrients or water quality aspects of, you know, get heavy rains, and instead of having a tilled field losing nutrients and soil, you've got something there to hold it. So it provides those benefits while also being a crop you can sell. When you look at how you manage multiple aspects of your farm, so if you're a dairy farm, it gives you a manure window outside of spring and fall. So an opportunity to make sure that pit is a little bit emptier before, you know, usually, typically, not going to use the N-word, normal, in a fall in Wisconsin, we tend to have a wet period where either you can't get the crop off or you can't get out in the field to spread the manure. So being able to pull some of that into a different season is an opportunity to make sure that you can outlast any kind of weather effects you might see. Lime, if you need to lime a field, that's a great opportunity. Gives you a nice big window to get the lime out there, adjust the pH before you go into what you may consider your more valuable crops like corn and soybeans or alfalfa. Tile, great time to tile. A lot of guys tile their wheat ground. That's how they decide where to put that in the rotation. It's like, well, I'd like to tile this field this year, so it's going into wheat so that when it comes off, I can get in there with tile. And in general, it's just spreading out your labor with all these things. It's not, you're not cramming so many things into a small window. It gives you opportunities not only from the harvest side where you could tune up your combine in the wheat crop, and you've got a little bit more time to play around. You're not as up against the clock as you are necessarily with things like corn grain as we get into the later season.
I like what it does to spread out labor, because one of the downsides, though, with spreading out labor is now you're working long, you know, sometimes longer.
Yep.
However, it's at a time period that usually it's drier. You can get out in the fields, and it's not a bad timing to be out there doing stuff. And then when you're having to plant the wheat too, there's usually a little window there that, you know, after your soybean harvest, you can get out, and so you usually want to get in as soon as you can. So it's a little bit tight and cram, but there's time. So I really like what it does for that, is that when then this time of year, when you're got a lot of corn yet to harvest and all that, if some of that would have been in wheat,
you'd be 40, 80 acres you don't have to,
harvest
yet.
Yeah. I'd argue that this last couple, the manure window, the labor, tile, all that might be second to like the income you get, like of the benefits of having wheat, like all the other things you can do. You didn't, you know, we mentioned cover crops, but you also can do fall alfalfa seeding. I've got some guys that grow straight grass instead of alfalfa, and they planted all wheat this year. We killed the volunteers that came back, and we planted our grass mix, and that stuff is like huge right now. Like, we can do it after corn because of silage yet, but man, it looks so much better after wheat.
When it's wheat. In alfalfa, you can't. It's too
right, wheat. Exactly.
So I would agree with you, Bill. You're even talking about not just the cover crop scenario, but literally being able to save a seeding year on some of your perennial crops.
Right.
So, yeah, that is a huge, huge benefit.
Obviously, you fight that risk of being too dry, that it doesn't germinate and some of that, but we seem to find enough rain to get things going.
All right. And lastly, what I want to talk about was pest and disease cycle benefits. So these are general rotational benefits in a lot of crops, but just having that extra time out of corn or out of beans, whether it's soybean cyst nematode, corn rootworm, or, you know, residue-borne diseases, things that hang around in the residue, gives you an opportunity to kind of break that up, cycle it through, and limit your risk when it comes to having to deal with those particular issues of pests and disease in the rotation. You know, corn on corn on corn, we've seen time and again what rootworm is doing and how it's starting to get around some of the tools that we have in our toolbox to manage those. So being able to break that up in the rotation helps us get more use and time out of those tools, but also make sure that we aren't dealing with population's a pest that hopefully are going to be an issue because we are rotating a little bit faster. And that's not to say that, you know, corn, soybean, wheat, or corn, alfalfa, wheat are the best rotations. Maybe you can work all four and get a longer rotation. I mean, there's lots of opportunities, but this is a very valuable crop, even outside of just the crop itself.
And the disease pest thing is hard to put a number on,
right,
to know what you're gaining, but obviously more things you get in the rotation, the longer you're going to have even soybean cyst nematode, getting that away from soybeans longer versus a corn-soybean rotation is such a big thing. And I know, I'm sure, Todd, you guys are starting to take some soybean cyst nematode samples in these cornfields that were going to beans next year. So this is another opportunity to just get away from that one crop a little bit longer.
All right. So there you go. Some things to think about as you debate whether to keep wheat in the rotation. Some of the value is beyond just the crop itself. It's in how it affects the rotation overall. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So our neighbors to the west in the University of Minnesota are working to not only boost the oil content of soybeans, but also, you know, overall just breed better soybeans. So the University of Minnesota soybean breeders are working to increase oil content from 22%, to closer to 30%, which will help meet the higher oil demand that we are seeing with soybeans. So at University of Minnesota, soybean breeders are looking far beyond the next harvest. They're developing varieties that can withstand pests, push higher yields, and meet new demands for things like renewable fuels. It also means that soybean breeding can be an innovation that would cater to new demands in the future. Aaron Lorenz, a professor of agronomy and plant genetics, has spent the past decade leading efforts to ensure farmers have tools that work today and decades down the road. Standing in research plots near St. Paul, he gestured toward a row of soybeans to tell the story of decades of progress. So, one of the things they're looking to battle that we were talking about was soybean cyst nematode. So, looking at different varieties to help with current resistance. They're also breeding for renewable diesel and high oil soybeans. And in the future, who knows what soybeans may look like, but there could be other potential uses for them down the road as well. So they're always looking to the future to see what they can do with soybeans. So kind of a cool thing that they're working on. And, you know, we've had lots of discussions about the whole high oil soybean and the benefits that has, especially in dairy production. So
that's going to skyrocket if these nutritionists jump on it,
right,
more than they already are.
All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So as we're talking about wheat, and Wisconsin was once the wheat hub of the nation, thought it'd be good to talk about the history of wheat in Wisconsin. So wheat was Wisconsin's first major agricultural crop. Most of the people who immigrated intended to become farmers, especially of wheat because it's low initial planting cost and relatively high rate of return. Development of mechanical agricultural implements better suited to prairie conditions allowed wheat production to expand dramatically in the 1850s. Before, with draft animals in short supply and wooden plows that broke easily, farmers could only plant a small number of acres. Wisconsin was producing the second highest wheat yield in the U.S. by 1860. Over the next 5 years, Wisconsin farmers harvested over 100 million bushels, more than two-thirds of which were exported. Wheat production peaked statewide in 1870, but signs of its decline had been evident as early as the 1850s in some parts of the state. Three factors led to its decline: soil depletion, unsteady prices, and the railroads. Railroad development made eastern markets more accessible at the same time that it opened up more fertile lands west of Wisconsin in Minnesota and the Dakotas. Wheat acreages declined after the Civil War, most rapidly in the southern, central, and eastern counties, where corn, hay, oats, and other feed crops were substituted. The growth of wheat farming also created the need for a milling industry that was located primarily in shipping areas. The state also developed an agricultural implement industry to meet the needs of wheat farmers and improve production. So, then we became the dairy state. When wheat didn't work out quite how we
thought. When wheat was. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy because now you can just go to Spotify. So, download Spotify on your Android phone. Or if you have an iPhone, you can download Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And all you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio, and you can find us there. You can still listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast or follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, with some current events. So, Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
That was
a little out of order there.
Yeah.
He was jumping the gun.
Chilling with his...
So excited for yes. Cool Beans. That's corny.
Sorry.
So excited.
Let's go.
All right. So our Cool Beans this week, from corn to cattle, farmers are pivoting to create profit. So with commodity prices under pressure and input costs on the rise, many row crop farmers are evaluating options and looking for new revenue opportunities in the process. For Troy and Stacy Hedrick, they that required making a bold shift in their farming operation about 4 years ago, started converting much of their cropland to pasture and expanding the cow herd. It's a path that no one would describe as easy, but as Troy puts it, you're going to do something hard if you're in agriculture, so choose your hard. So they wanted to take advantage of the growing beef market. Farmers are also, as like kind of Bill mentioned, the grass crops, putting marginal land into grass. So while they decided to focus on beef business and less on grains, also encouraged the Hedricks to put some grass out there, not only in form of pastures, but also taking advantage of Ducks Unlimited programs that fit their goal, and converted 250 acres of cropland to pasture, as well as being able to use that for grass feed. So sometimes looking beyond just what the immediate part of your farm is doing can be good. It's a way to vertically integrate your farm and find out ways of expanding the ability for you to make a profit. So sometimes you got to think a little bit out of the box when things are looking on the downward trend. So it's cool that they were able to make that work for their farm. Now our That's Corny this week. Members of the cattle industry are saying the Argentina plan isn't the way to lower beef prices. The CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says President Trump's plan to import more beef from Argentina undercuts America's farmers and ranchers. That's what he's asking for, is us as cattle producers to take less money for our cattle. So Colin Woodall told Brownfield News that producers have been struggling for years, need to be able to allow producers to the opportunity to make a little money to try to get made whole from previous years, and we know from previous experience that government intervention in the marketplace does not work. He said it also smacks of political moves, not so much really intended to address any significant economic problems here in the U.S. So definitely some pushback on that concept of bringing in foreign beef to affect prices, so see how that plays out in the coming months. And now, our Field Good Friday, Harvest of a Lifetime. Farmer sees record corn yields in southern Minnesota, so Mike Madsen's corn yields at harvest are 20 to 30 bushels over his actual production history, with even the early maturities exceeding expectations. So in southern Minnesota, farmers are done with harvest when it comes to soybeans and are moving quickly through corn. While the corn crop in other areas of the Corn Belt has fallen short of the hype, that wasn't the case for Mike Madsen of Heron Lake, who was in a garden spot. "We've seen things we've never seen on yield monitors before," he said. "This fall is having the corn harvest of a lifetime. It'll be the best in my career, and I think in a lot of local farmers' careers that have been farming for 30 or 40 years," he said. Madsen said it began with spring, where they were fortunate enough to have a fast planting season, able to get done early and quick. And through the growing season, it maintained, you know, they get a shot of rain every 4 or 5 days, held through from planting to pollination. He also said that his corn escaped the hot nighttime temperatures during pollination. So their nighttime temperatures were under the 70-degree mark all but a couple nights in August, so got really good pollination weather. He also managed to dodge disease pressure in that area, so some of the heavy diseases like southern rust were able to be controlled. He had fungicide in place to help with those. And so his corn yields are at 250 plus. Said 100 day and under was 220 to 240, and anywhere from 100 to 110 day maturity, seeing 250 plus. So, and it's dry too. His early corn was at 15 to 16% moisture on harvest, and his 100 to 110 day were 17 to 18%. So, sounds like they had a really good year right there. So, good for him. We can all hope for those conditions in our part of the world next year, but this year just happened to be that part of Minnesota. So, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
Today we talked about the rotational benefits of wheat and how it can play a part in your rotations. Spotlight, we looked at soybean breeding. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of wheat in Wisconsin. Cool Beans this week was cattle farmers finding ways to pivot and create opportunities on the farm. That's Corny, is the idea of bringing in foreign beef to offset beef prices. And our Field Good Friday is a harvest of a lifetime for a farmer in southern Minnesota. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.